All right, thanks everybody for coming. My name is Robert Green, technical evangelist with Microsoft, and this talk is on design guidance for Windows Store line of business apps. And basically what it is an opportunity for us to think about this, to have a discussion about what Windows Store line of business apps should look like. So, I should probably tap the right computer to make the slides advance. That would probably help. Okay. What I did not put on the slide, apparently, is my email address, rogreen@microsoft.com. So if you have any questions at all, feel free to ping me. So what I want to do in this session is I want to explore how we adhere to the Microsoft design guidelines in line of business apps, talk a little bit more about how to better use the built-in controls. I want to discuss, mostly, I wrote working with data here, but I really should have meant presenting data, because I don't want to get into too much about data entry, but I do want to talk about showing data, and then get us all thinking about this some more. So notice that it is not my objective to make sure we understand the way to build apps, right? Microsoft has done, a very, very good job of laying out the design guidelines. You can go to design.windows.com, I think it's called, and there is an awful lot of stuff there. The guys that created the design guidance spent a very long time thinking about it, did a very, very good job writing it up, and so it's very easy to go start to see and start to understand how to build Windows Store apps, which is great for people building news readers and music players and all the consumer type apps. But you know, we developers who are building line of business apps, what are we supposed to do? And so the number one takeaway from this is going to be there is a set of design guidance for building Windows Store apps. And whether we're building a consumer app or a commercial app or line of business app, we should follow the design guidance. The design guidance is not meant to be dogmatic. It is not thou shalt do this under penalty of being kicked out or under penalty of never, you know, getting your app to run. It is guidance. The design guidelines are there to encourage consistency. Their number one goal is to encourage consistency with the thinking that if your app looks and feels like the other apps, then that's a good thing because now everybody knows how to use your app. And if you think about it, we adopt that from day one. Who here has built an app with a menu system in it? Where did you put file? You put it in the upper left, right? Imagine, now, did you have to put it in the upper left? Would the app compile if you put it in the upper right? Go ahead, do that. Next time you build an app, put window, help, and file on the all the way over on the right. And then have a pool how long it'll take your users to call you and go, what's up with this? Where's the file menu? And you can explain to them, it's four words over. It doesn't matter. That's not where they're going to look. They're going to look in the upper left, and if it's not there, they're not going to know how to use your app. And guess who gets blamed? You. And you should be blamed. That's kind of silly. So that's what design guidance gives us the ability to do, is to build apps that people instinctively know how to use. So what we're going to chat about in this session is how to take that guidance and apply it to some of the more common scenarios in line of business apps. Okay, so line of business apps. What do we see UI-wise in traditional line of business apps? Lots of menus and lots of toolbars for navigation. We have menus at the top. The more menu choices, the better. We have toolbars. And we struggle between how small. If we get them really small, we can get a lot in there, but then they can't be seen. So lots of menus and toolbars, which is known as Chrome. Our line of business apps do a lot of things. There are a lot of actions the users can take. So we have buttons. We have lots and lots of buttons. In addition to the toolbars with buttons, we have the screen full of buttons. Save, add, delete, this, that, the other thing. The more data, the better. Our users demand it. And even when we try and convince our users, you don't actually want all that data on the screen the users disagree with us, and more often than not, they win. So the more data, the better, which means we will use as small fonts as possible to get as much data on there as possible. And then we design once and run everywhere. And what that means is we build the app for, you know, like a 19-inch monitor, and that's what you get. And if you run it on a 19-inch monitor, it'll fill the screen. If you run it on a 14-inch monitor, well, too bad for you. You're going to have to scroll or it gets clipped off. If you run it on a 57-inch monitor, too bad for you. You got this much screen real estate and the rest of it's just empty space. Yeah, you could, I suppose, particularly in a WIN format, fill up the rest of the screen, but who's going to do that? It's a lot easier to do in XAML. It's a lot easier to do in HTML, but I don't know that we necessarily do it, and we're certainly not used to doing it. So what we wind up with in traditional line of business apps is something that looks like this. Yeah, digging deep into the archives for this one. I won't ask who was around long enough to build an app like this because I don't want to embarrass anybody. This is a very old example. We've got menus, we've got a toolbar, we've got lots of small fonts. Notice there's a scroll bar because all that information's on the screen, so you scroll up and down in this fixed window. Now, if we go to something that's maybe a little bit more modern, we still are using the traditional techniques. Look at all that data. The only reason we haven't filled up that middle screen there is because this is actually a sample I downloaded off of MSDN. They only put 10 records in the database, right? So fill that up with 200 or 300 records in the database, and that entire middle screen would be filled. And then check out the small fonts. Check out the links here. Instead of using buttons, there's links all over the place. I'm not even sure what the loyalty board is, right? But that's a traditional line of business app. So we're used to writing apps like that, and we're going to talk about, you know, how we make the transition over to Windows 8. So now Windows 8 rolls around, and we think it's a great platform for building line of business apps. Why would you build a business line of business app on Windows 8? You can take advantage of the new scenarios, particularly around touch and mobile. It's not necessarily the case that you're going to take every or any desktop app and make it a Windows 8 app. They're not necessarily all great candidates. We kind of recommend the place you start is an app that goes along with the traditional desktop app, particularly around touch. So you've got your sales reps or your service people, when they're in the office, yes, maybe they're using the traditional desktop app because it has all of the data. And then when they need to go on the road, they take their tablet. They're talking to the same data, but they've got a touch-centric UI, which gives better productivity because it's fast and fluid. Get things done fast and fluid, get things done faster, take advantage of touch, get mouse and keyboard and pen for free. And then, of course, we say you've got compatibility, continue to use existing software, use the same skills you have, and security because the apps run in isolated app containers. So this is our primary message on why you want to build a line of business app on Windows 8. And the first two ones, new scenarios and better productivity, a lot of that is about the mobility and the UI. Okay, so that which kind of leaves us in a world where we're wondering, is this incompatible with this? So what do we do about these things? So what would our design guidelines be when we build a line of business app? Well, the first thing we want to think about is keeping the design clean. This goes under a couple names, content over Chrome, fast and fluid. What that basically means is don't fill up the entire screen with information and buttons and toolbars and menus. When the user launches the app, it should be about what they can do right now. All that Chrome is about things that you could do if you wanted to, which is fine in the traditional desktop world, but kind of goes against the guidelines. You want to make it easy for people to be able to do their job, but when they launch the app, they launched it with a reason, and you take them to the first thing they need to do, and that's what takes up the screen. So keep the design clean. You're still going to be able to navigate, right? You still need to be able to move from section to section and from pieces of data to pieces of data. And the three primary things we're going to look at in the demos are using the top app bar, scrolling, and then using semantic zoom as ways of giving you navigation. Of course, there are lots of actions the user needs to take. Just because you're going to build a Windows Store app doesn't mean that the user doesn't get to do the things they continue to get to do. It may mean that you don't make an app that does 200 different things, right? We have desktop apps, and the user, there's 200 things the user can do. We tend to shove them all into the same app. Maybe, you know, in a Windows Store app, maybe we would break that down into three or four apps where the user does, you know, a smaller amount of things. We'd make the apps a little bit more oriented towards the task that the user needs to perform instead of your one-stop shop for absolutely everything you can do. Okay? But there's still lots of actions you need to take, and the two primary ways in UI that you're going to get that type of interaction is through buttons on the canvas or buttons or icons in the app bar. So we'll take a look at that. And then I also want to talk about tiles. We recommend in a Windows Store app that people invest in a great tile. It's completely understandable in a consumer app why you would do that, because it's sitting on the start screen and it is essentially your ad for your app, right? Use me, I'm a great game. You want to see the weather? Tap here. But we can also take advantage of that in line of business apps. Okay, so the top app bar, lives on the top of the screen, so it's always just a swipe away. You swipe up, you get the bottom app bar, which has actions. The top app bar gives you navigation. You're going to use thumbnails or icons. You can use pictures up there as well. And this is a great way to provide global navigation around different sections of your app. And then for semantic zoom, hopefully you're aware of what it is, but just to repeat, this makes it easier to navigate through large content sets. And the basic design guidance is if there's three or more pages of panning, so if the user has to go like this three or more times, then you should consider adding semantic zoom to make it easier to get from the information here to the information there, assuming that you can group it somehow, which you typically can, whether it's by city, state, or region, or letter of the last name, or year, or whatever. Okay? So, let's take a look at some of these. Okay, so for navigation, first app, and every app that I'm going to show today is either available in the Windows Store for free, or you'll be able to get it off CodePlex. So, Push BI is a great app. You can download this from the store. It gives you the ability to view business intelligence and PKIs. It ships with some sample data, which is what we're going to use. You start up, and it shows you your favorites. Expense violations, marketing, FTE hires, percentage change, etc. If you scroll to the right, then you get to see the social section, which is, you know, could be Yammer, could be Twitter, could be what your customers are saying, could be what you're saying about your customers, I suppose, and anything in between. Then you scroll over again and you get to your favorites. So here are all these PKIs, favorites to movers. There's a bunch of sections in here. But the first way I navigate in this app is to just scroll. So we understand that navigation 101 is your finger. Or, of course, the mouse wheel works great as well. Or, of course, the horizontal scroll bar also works great for navigation. So you don't necessarily have to deposit the user on the main screen and say, oh, you want to see social? Go up and click here, and then I'll replace the screen with social. Oh, you want to see the favorites? Click here, and I'll replace the screen with favorites. Oh, you want to see movers? Click here, and I'll replace the screen with movers, which, of course, is what we would traditionally do in our traditional desktop apps, because it's a little bit easier than just making one big screen and having to do scrolling. In Windows 8 and in the tablet world, users are very used to scrolling. And notice in this app, on the right-hand side, we display a little bit of social, which is the user's clue that there's more to get to. So they're very used to scrolling. And even if they don't have a touch-capable monitor, they're going to wind up being very used to scrolling with the mouse. Okay. Another example of this is in this expenses app, which I wrote. This actually was my favorite moment from the keynote. Did anybody go to the keynote? Okay, did you see when we talked about Windows 8.1 and the fact that you could join a workplace and view your documents, but you could also enroll and download apps? Did you see the app she downloaded? The one I wrote. All right. But let's move on to what this is about. I told her about that afterwards. She enjoyed it. Okay, so when I call up past expense reports, I see the first years. I want to go see prior years, and all I need to do is scroll. So here again, there's no reason to create separate queries and separate pages and have buttons or menus or whatever to move around a group of data. I said I want to see past expense reports. Well, here they are. Now, obviously, if I had thousands of these, I might come up with a different scheme, but I've just got 24 of them, so this works really, really well. Another example of this is the SAP customer financial fact sheet available in the store. I come in and look at one of my customers, and I see the key facts up front, then sales volume, then notes, invoices, sales orders. So all the information I need is here. It's very easy to get to. If I want to drill down on something, I just tap, and then I can navigate back. But very easy to move from section of data to section of data without having to hog up the screen with any kind of Chrome, without having to write buttons, without having to do additional queries. So that's going to be the first thing you think about when you want to do navigation. Now, you got to balance that, however, with the constant swiping, right? One, two, three. At some point, I'm going to get tired because I want to go directly to the invoices. I haven't necessarily memorized how many finger swipes that is. I don't literally necessarily know where it is. So in this case, this app has semantic zoom. I just take these two fingers, swipe in, and now I get what would have been in the menu in the first place, right? Here's the Chrome. The whole point of content over Chrome is the Chrome's easily available, but it's not there immediately. So now when I want to go to invoices, and I see there's five of them, so we can have additional information here and give numbers or totals, additional information there. I go to invoices, and now I go directly to the invoices, and I see all five of them. One of those better have more than one. I only see four things there. Yeah, there's one of these definitely has more than one invoice. Okay. So that's an example of using the semantic zoom. I also have done this in the expense reports, where when I swipe in, now I can choose the year, and I also am showing the totals there. And then another example of this is AdventureWorks. Do I have that running? Yeah. This is the reference app that ships with the Prism for Windows Runtime from the Patterns and Practice team that Brian gave an excellent talk on the other day. So I come in here, and this, of course, is a shopping app, so I can see the various categories. If I pinch in, then I see the categories, and it happens to show me number of products in them. So I want to go to components, and I go right there. Okay. So we're definitely going to use swiping, but we're going to give the users additional ways of moving around using the semantic zoom. But what we can also use is the top app bar. So now if I swipe up in the top app bar, I can have additional ways, and I don't necessarily have to duplicate them. This version of the app chose home and shopping cart as the things you can navigate in the top app bar. They could have put components and clothing and bikes if they wanted to, but they chose just to do home and shopping cart. So I tap shopping cart, I go to the shopping cart from anywhere I'm at, I tap home, and I go back home. What I did in the expenses app, on the main screen, when you first come into this app, I decided to make it, what I decided in this app is I wanted this app to help you. So I wanted this app to give you information. So when you start the app, the first thing you see is a summary. You see the number of outstanding charges that you haven't expensed yet. And you see whether they're new, meaning they're under 30 days old, old, meaning they're more than 30 days old, which is a violation of our corporate policy, and how many are more than 45 days old, which means at that point Amex can start fining me. How many reports I have that I've started but haven't submitted, which is saved. How many reports I've sent to my manager and I'm waiting for my manager to do something. And then how many past reports I have. So my main screen is sort of like a start screen with tiles that are giving me information. So from here, I don't have a navigation bar because to navigate to any of these, I just tap it. So if I tap pending reports, I'm going to go see the pending reports. Or if I tap past reports, I'm going to go to the past reports. But from here, if I swipe up, now I've got in the nav bar each of the different categories. Home, charges, saved reports, pending reports, needing approval, which if I'm a manager is the expense reports that I haven't approved yet, or to past reports. So now to go to saved reports or charges, I just swipe up, tap there, and go. So those are three ways you can add navigation into an application, completely consistent with the guidelines. Users will completely understand what this means, what the semantic zoom means and how to use it, and then also, of course, who doesn't understand scrolling back and forth. Okay. Okay, so that's navigation. Let's talk about app bars. I think there's some confusion on app bars. I think they did a pretty good job of writing it up in the design guidelines, but still there's some confusion over what goes where on the app bars. And the guidance says that persistent commands go on the right. So things that appear throughout the app that are not specific to the particular item you're looking at go on the right. So things like new, add, delete, remove go on the far right. Selection commands are on the left. So if you, commands that are specific to a particular item, so pin on the start screen, I actually would have thought that delete would go on the left as well. Commands that enable selection, so unselect this would go on the left, but select all would go on the right. Okay, so that's the general guidance. It's not dogmatically enforced. It's not like if you submit an app to the app store and they think you have a button in the wrong place that it won't go in. But to the extent that you can, A, look at how the other apps use the app bars and then try to maintain consistency with those, and then B, keep to these as general rules, the better off you are. Now, we talked about there'd be a lot of actions to take in an application. So what do you do if you've got 25 things that the user wants to do? Are you going to put 25 icons in the app bar? I suppose if you have a big enough monitor, you get 25 apps in the app bar. If you had one of those, what's that company that makes the giant screens? Perceptive Pixel? Perceptive Pixel. So if you have one of those devices, like the 80-inch touch screens, you could probably get 25 icons in that app bar. But in all likelihood, you're going to keep it to a reasonable number. And then you're going to use menus and flyouts to augment that. So if you might have a save button, but there's three different ways you can save. Save without submitting, save and submit. I don't know, there's a third one. So in the expense report, I've got two different ways you can save. Or for print, you might have print preview and actually print one app bar button, but then use a menu or a flyout to augment that. And then the recommendation is to hide disabled commands. In buttons, what we've kind of been taught to do is you don't hide a button if it's not available, you disable it, right? If you hide buttons, that's confusing. So we've kind of swapped that one in Windows Store apps. We say buttons that don't do anything are confusing. And if you think about it, if you're trying to keep the design clean, if you're going for content over Chrome, then it really doesn't make any sense to take up valuable screen real estate, to waste screen real estate with Chrome that doesn't apply. So in that case, you would disable the buttons. On the other hand, do what makes sense. If that turns out to confuse the heck out of your users, then you can consider going ahead and disabling them. Again, it's not meant to be dogmatic. So if it makes way more sense to have buttons that enable and disable as appropriate, by all means, do it. Okay, so let's take a look at some app bars. So I personally think the two best examples of app bars are the calendar, or a good place to start, are the calendar and the mail app. So let's launch the calendar app. Here's my very busy week here at TechEd. So the first thing you'll notice is there are no buttons, right? This is the ultimate example of content over Chrome. You come into this app to see your calendar, and the thing you see is your calendar. Now, if you swipe up to get the app bar, here are the next level of things you might want to do. View today, view the week, view the work week, view the month, go to today and add. Those are in the app bar, very easily accessible, but not necessarily on the actual canvas. Okay. Now, if I press new, notice that the save and cancel wind up on the canvas. This actually is a very good idea. When you create a calendar item, it's pretty much two things you're going to do with it. Save it, change your mind, right? I can't really think of a third. So why would you necessarily make the user swipe up to get to those buttons? Those are two buttons that absolutely can go on the canvas. And of course, the recommendation is when they're on the canvas, you don't put text under them. Now, if you've got five buttons that the user is going to do all of the time, and you can't think of icons that clearly define what they mean, then put them in the app bar so you can have text under them. Would be a good recommendation. I suppose you could put them on the canvas and have text under them, but at that point, you might consider just putting them in the app bar. Okay. So another good example, I think, is the mail app. And this should bring up my Outlook.com account, not Microsoft. Nope. Let's go to my personal email. I don't think there's anything in there that I didn't want you to see, but let's switch over to my personal email. Now, in this one, they decided that what are the things that you come into the mail app, first thing you want to do is see your mail. Okay, so we've got sort of in the middle there, the list of mail, and then we've got the actual mail messages taking up a fair amount of space. And then we've got the folders on the left. And this is an interesting idea. This is interesting because in the developer and consumer previews, the folders didn't show up. And if you wanted to see the folders, you swiped up and they were on the app bar. And clearly we got a bunch of feedback from customers saying, no, I really need to see my folders, and I don't want to spend the swipe to get the folders. So we put the folders on the canvas because of user demand. Okay? And then what are you going to do with email? You're going to create a new one, you're going to reply, or you're going to delete. So those buttons wind up on the canvas. And then other things like sync and pin and flag and make junk and move go in the app bar. Move is actually an interesting one. So if you were deciding in this app, should move be on the canvas or should it be in the app bar, the best way probably to determine is to run some usability tests with your users and find out which buttons they really want on the canvas and which ones they really want on the app bar, right? So test it out and don't be afraid to move things back and forth. Okay. So in the expenses app, again, if we go to, for example, charges, if I swipe up, I've got the things that are more global, like select all and new charge in the app bar. If I select one of these, then the things that relate to that item, clear selection, add to report on the left, select all and new charge are on the right. And notice that when I selected this, the app bar automatically appeared, which is in the guidance. The start screen works the same way. I've selected this. That tells me that I'm about to do something with this. I didn't just select it for no good reason. If I want to view it, I'm just going to tap it. But if I've selected it, that means there's something I want to do with this, so the app bar appears. Now, if I tap this, I may or may not want to change this. So the Save button winds up in the app bar, because I may or may not be looking at this. I may or may not be editing this. And in the new charge, and I don't even remember why at this point, and I'm not even sure I agree with this anymore, is I put the Save charge in the app bar, and I decided not to have a cancel button. I changed my mind, I just hit the back button. And then in code, I'm smart enough to know whether or not I made any changes. Not 100% sure that I like that. I think I should have put the save button on the canvas personally. And then whether you have a cancel button or just go back is a matter of personal preference. Okay. And then if I do add this to a report, so let's create an expense report out of a couple of these. I got to give it a purpose. So tech ed, notes, customer, meeting. Again, the save is on the app bar, which at least I'm being consistent within the app. And then when I save, there's two ways you can save. I can submit the report, which means I'm done with it, or I can save it without submitting it. So rather than have two different save buttons, I use a menu, which makes a lot of sense there because I don't want a save icon that says save and submit report and one that says save but do not submit report. That's too much text to go, sorry for the popping, that's too much text to go on the icon, but I don't necessarily, I want it to keep the description, I want to keep it descriptive, so that's a perfect use for a menu there because then it pops up as needed and I can be as wordy as I need to be. Okay, so that's app bars. Okay, let's talk about this idea of design once, run anywhere. Okay, so one of the interesting things about Windows 8 is it is built to run on a number of devices. On the one hand, it's the next version of Windows, right? Which means that it will run on any machine that runs Windows 7. So everything from the biggest, fattest desktop machine, to big, fat brick laptops, to nice, slick, thin ultrabooks, all the way down to cool Surfaces and other mobile devices. Windows 8 runs on all of those, which means that Windows Store apps run on all of those. Okay, and we've never had to think about this. Yes, of course, we've had desktop apps that run on both the desktop and the laptop, but have we ever designed differently for when it was going to be running on the laptop than when it was going to be running on the desktop? I mean, if you have, that's awesome. If you haven't, that's pretty normal. So we need to think about this. It's particularly true if you're building a consumer app. This has to be foremost in your mind because people are going to go to the Windows Store, download your app, hopefully pay for it, hopefully make some money off it, and then run it on any number of different devices. And as far as we're concerned at Microsoft, the more the better, right? We just talked about 8-inch machines that are coming out, and who knows what else will be coming out. So anything from the 80-inch perceptive pixels and up to down to 8 inches, and who knows, possibly even less. I don't know, maybe someday Windows 8 will be running on a watch. And if we do that, I promise we will have a tech ed session on design guidance for Windows Store line of business apps that are going to run on a watch. And it's going to be a very short, it's going to have one slide, which in 72-point font will say, why? And then we're going to be done. Okay, so we need to consider that. We need to consider that there's two different orientations, landscape and portrait, for devices. Now, granted, your laptop, your desktop, your ultrabook doesn't necessarily have portrait mode. This is a Asus ultrabook. I can pick it up and turn it sideways, and then I get to turn my head. The screen doesn't adjust. But on your surfaces, anything with accelerometer? Is that the, sorry? It's the accelerometer, okay. That can detect that will change the orientation. And if people can go into portrait mode, it means they will. So you need to design your application for portrait mode. You would do this with media queries if you're using HTML and CSS. You'd do it in Visual State Manager if you're doing it in XAML. It's not terribly difficult. It is tedious. It's a lot of work to write these. It takes a lot of time and a lot of trial and error, especially with the margins and the locations and the sizing. But the key thing is you have to do it because people will take their device and flip it on its side. And then the question is, what does your app do? If your app goes from requiring 3 swipes to requiring 10 swipes and only displays in this much of the real estate because you didn't use the rest of the real estate, then people are going to have a lesser opinion of your app, right? So what you really want to do is change the orientation from 100% horizontal to filling up vertically, and then you're still going to be able to scroll back and forth. What you do not do is change the scroll direction. You do not go from scrolling horizontally in portrait mode to scrolling vertically in portrait mode. That you do not do. But what you, when you do that is when you're in snapped view. And snapped view is when you can have 2 apps on the screen at the same time. One of them takes up this much space. That's the snapped view. And the other one takes up the filled space. And I believe that in 8.1 we've announced some enhancements to this. You don't necessarily get just the narrow and just the rest of the screen. You've got some more choices in that. I'm not going to go into much more detail on that, but we'll have to pay attention to that. And again, users can snap your app, and because they can means they will, you now have to decide what happens with your app. Does your app still work? Ideally, it does. The ideal thing is to maintain the fidelity of your application. It should function in snapped mode just as well as it does in filled mode. Now, sometimes this isn't feasible. If you're playing a game, right, if you're playing the pinball game, right, which takes up the entire screen, what does the pinball game do when you go into snapped mode? What it should do is display a leaderboard or something, right, or where you are in your high score. I don't want to play the pinball game like this. So for a game, that would work. For other apps, you should do at least, it should still be functional. Okay. So what other, okay. And then there's the multiple form factors and the viewing options, and you really need to design for this. So there's orientation, you know, the default landscape, 1366 by 768, as we just discussed, adjust for portrait with media queries and view state models, adjust for snapped and fill using the same thing, striving for feature parity. Fill basically means landscape with less screen real estate. There's really nothing you need to do for that, although you certainly could if you wanted to. You might decide in fill view just to make all the fonts smaller so that everything still fits on the screen. You could certainly do that. Then what you want to take into account, and we kind of talked about this, is the various screen sizes. What does your app look like on a surface? What does your app look like on an 8-inch device or various device? What does it look like on a normal, you know, a decent-sized laptop or ultrabook? What does it look like on a 20-inch monitor, on a 40-inch monitor, right? And what are you going to do about that? The built-in controls will adjust automatically, but there's more you can do beyond that. And then the question is, do you want to scale? Do you want to scale the fonts, not just the graphics? We talk about how you should scale your graphics, but you might also scale the fonts and the spacing to get everything to fit. Okay, and then if you're going into portrait mode or fill mode or snap mode, you have less room for the app bar. If you only got a handful of commands on the app bar, you don't have to worry about it. But let's say you filled up the app bar. It's pretty much as full as it can be horizontally. And now the user rotates the app. It's in portrait mode, and you've got, what, about 40% of the space you had before. What are you going to do with your app bars there? Ideally, you want to keep the same commands, and after more than five, they're going to start wrapping. But if you had 30 or 25 commands, and they wrap to five rows, now you have five rows of app bar buttons, which is probably too much. So at that point, you might want to consider, do I really want 25 in the first place? Maybe that's a good opportunity to go to menus and flyouts, keep maybe five, or maybe what you do is you have a dozen in horizontal mode. When you switch over to portrait, you switch over to only five buttons, and then you've got menus that appear, right? So you really need to kind of keep that in mind. So let's go see a few examples of this. Okay, let's go to the Push BI application. And again, this is showing me PKIs and whatnot. When I snap this, it says what I'm going to do is I'm just going to display the favorites. I'm going to display the most important information. So this app decided I'm not going to do everything. I don't have the social here. All I've got are the favorites. So the most important stuff appears, and then the app changes to scrolling vertically. Now, it still works. If I tap one of these, I go and view it, and look what it does. It says, I can't display this information in snap mode. It makes no sense to display this graph in only this much screen real estate, so I'm going to bounce back into fill mode, into full mode, okay, which is like a single line of code to do that. That's a perfectly reasonable approach. So that's what these guys decided to do in this app when it goes into snapped mode. In the AdventureWorks app, when you go into snap mode, this shows you all of the same information that you had before. It still shows you the categories. It just shows it smaller. So this app is completely functional. I can scroll through the categories, and the fonts are nice and big, so I don't even need my reading glasses to see what's going on. I can see my shopping cart. I can actually continue to use this. If I tap one of these, there's the product details. I can add it to the cart. Notice the cart says one. If I go to the shopping cart, I can still check out, sign in. And I can fill in the shipping address and the billing address. This app is 100% functional in snap mode. Excellent design. And they did a really good job of designing it. It's still very, very readable and still completely usable. And then, of course, if you want more room, then you just jump out to full mode. And I kind of did the same thing with the expenses app, although I'm not nearly as good a designer, so it doesn't look quite as nice. But you still see the information. You can still see your charges. You can go into one, make changes to it. You can swipe up, and there's the save and select all. In snapped mode, you lose the labels, which I understand why that's the case. It's kind of unfortunate that you lose the labels, but there really is no room to put them. So I could create a new charge, I could create an expense report, and I can go and see my past reports. And now what I wind up doing is just scrolling. There's no semantic zoom in here, so I don't have the ability for easy navigation, but the app is still completely usable, and I haven't sacrificed any functionality. I've just sacrificed a little bit of good looks because I'm not that good a designer. Okay. So we kind of got a taste of this when you went into snap view. You might have seen when I'm in full mode, I've got this reasonably good looking, I hope, nav bar. But when I go into snapped mode, what I do is I shrink the icons a little bit and I get rid of the labels, but only the first two fit, and I'm not yet 100% sure, are you then supposed to swipe through the app bar? Through the top nav bar? I'm not really sure. I'm actually not 100% sure how that works. The AdventureWorks shopping app does the same thing, but they've only got two icons in there, so they get around the problem. That may have been the reason they only put two things in the app bar, because they didn't want to have to deal with what happens if you have five and they don't show up in Snap View. I'm going to assume that's not the reason, but I chose to not punt and admit that I don't know what to do. Well, actually, but I do know what to do, and that is to emulate what the news app does. So the news app has a very rich top app bar, and when you snap, it changes to vertical. This is what I want to do. So once I figure out how to do this, this is the answer to the question. Because now you have a fully functioning top nav bar. It just goes to vertical, right? So that's just a question of figuring out how to do that, which I haven't quite done yet. Dry run for customer demo. I have no idea what that means. Okay. So that's snapped view. Okay, let's talk about tiles and toast and stuff like that. There was a talk on this that Christian Nagel gave on the first day of the conference, so if you want to learn more about that, go there. So the tiles are these things here. It's what you see on the start screen. These are your tiles, okay? And the general recommendation is to have rich and engaging content, even when your app's not running. Not sure why that happened. And then you can update the content using tile notifications even if your app isn't running. So we have this concept of live tiles. And you've seen these. The mail app scrolls through your mail, and the calendar app shows you your upcoming appointment, and the people app shows you people you've linked in and Facebook with. And I enjoy watching that because I recognize maybe 20% of the people that scroll through. I've purposely linked in with all of them, and I've purposely accepted them as Facebook friends, but I got to be perfectly honest with you, most of the time I don't know who they are. I don't know what that says about me. And I'm not going to identify, I'm not going to stand up here and being recorded admitting which of my friends I don't recognize. But I will just say. you can also use toast notifications that shows up in that rectangle like we just saw to alert the users to relevant and time-sensitive information. And then you always need to understand that the users are in control of this, because they can come out to your tile and say, you know what, I really don't want you to constantly be scrolling, showing me the same thing over and over again, so they can turn off the live tile. Okay, so they can turn it on and turn it off when they want. So in terms of notifications, you've got a number of ways to do notifications. You can do a local notification where while your app is running, it's sending information. This is really more useful for sort of a background process, like if you're uploading a file or you've started some kind of process. It is not a good place to do things like announce that the record was saved or the record was deleted. It's really more for something that's happening in the background. Because the idea of the local toast notification is that you've left the app, and then when something occurs, you get notified, you tap that, and go back into the app. So if you're already in the app, there's no reason to use a toast notification because you're already there. You can schedule notifications where while the app's running, you send out information on a periodic basis. So you could do something like that where your tile is showing orders, and once a day you schedule a call to a service which brings down information to show you today's orders. Or you want to see the run rate on an hourly basis or something. The hourly basis, then you do it periodically where you pull a remote cloud service, could be on-prems as well for new content. So scheduled would say daily at noon. Periodic would be every 15 minutes, every hour, or whatnot. And then there's push notification, where you can use Windows push notification services to send notifications from the cloud. Be aware, however, and this is really the reason I put up this slide, because you need to be aware if you're building a line of business app, that if your app is not distributed through the Windows Store, you cannot sign up for Windows push notification services. So if you're writing an internal line of business app and installing it locally, internally, through sideloading, you don't get to take advantage of push notification services, at least in this release. Okay, so let's take a look at tiles. The thing I love about the live tiles is that your start screen is not just things you can do, but it's your dashboard, right? You fire up your desktop, and there's a bunch of icons there, and it tells you things you can do. If you double-click on this icon, Word will start, and it will open this Word document. If you double-click here, Visual Studio will start, and you can build an application. But it doesn't give you any information. The start screen, these tiles, tell you what you can do. Tap here and the mail app will start. Tap here and the expense app will start. But it also gives you information. So this expense report app is telling me how many outstanding charges I have. So I turn on my computer and I look at that tile and I immediately see, oh, I've got charges that haven't expensed, or I have expense reports waiting for me. Yes, I get the mails. I get mails on a regular, I'm actually pretty good about it. So I get mails occasionally that tell me I have unreconciled expenses. But do I then immediately go in and do anything about it? No, of course not. But if this told me I have three expense reports waiting for approval as a manager, then I'm much more likely to actually go do something about that than if I just wait for email, or if I just wait for my the people who report to me to see me as we pass in the hall and go, hey, how about that expense report? To which I say, yeah, I'll get to it. Okay. So the idea here is for your line of business apps to think about what information you want the users to have available to them from the start screen, even before they've started the app, and then have that information in the app, whether it's static information, whether it's information that gets pushed in there when the app runs, so when you exit the app, the tile tells you where you were in the process, or you're periodically pinging a server, whether it's on-prems or through the cloud, that's giving you information, updated information, the ability to use the live tiles, and then also group your start screen the way you want turns out to be extremely effective. A good example of that is the Push BI app, which, I mean, if you look at it, if we go back here, the Push BI does not have a live tile. What they do have are live secondary tiles. So I go into the Push BI app, and I look at these, and I say, what are the things I care most about? I kind of care about retail revenue. So I'm going to swipe up and pin this to the start screen and call it retail revenue. And then what else do I care about? I kind of care about the problem queue rate. Pin that to the start screen. And then let's get one that's good news for once. Sales revenue. There we go. That's good news. So I'll pin that to the start screen. Exit the app. Go down to the end. And I've now got these three tiles, which I'm going to create their own group, and then drag these all the way over here. And now when I turn on my computer in the morning, I'm getting information. I don't even have to launch the app. I've got this information, sales revenue, retail revenue, problem queue rate, and they're going to change colors. This is my dashboard. These are my PKIs without even having to start the app. This is possibly reason alone to build a Windows Store app, if you think about it. Can you do this in desktop apps? I suppose you could. How do you? I don't know. To do this in Windows Store App is a piece of cake. It's a handful of lines of code to update a tile. It's a handful of lines of code to create a secondary tile. You call the tile updater, I think it's the tile updater class, and there's a method called update tile or something like that. To update the tile, we've got a number of templates. It's just XML code. It's a handful of lines of code. And now what you can do is have your users rearrange their start screens so that when they start the app, the most important apps showing the most important information are right there. Okay? It's kind of a killer feature that, last time I checked, competing platforms do not have. Just saying. Okay. You want to do anything else on it? Yep. Okay, so next up, all right, let's talk about another feature, which is kind of a cool feature. You guys aware of sharing? Who's not really familiar with sharing? Okay, let me do a quick demo of sharing. So I'll do it in a consumer type scenario, and then we'll do it in a business scenario. So if I go into the news app, and let's see if there's any happy stories. Okay, this one. So I'm reading this and I say, oh, I think I know somebody that would be interested in this. I swipe over from the right and I tap share. And now what happens is I get a list from Windows of all apps that can be shared with. So you can register your app for a share contract, handful of lines of code. And then when the user swipes in from the right, there's an event that's fired at the Windows level that you in your app have subscribed to. And these apps have registered as apps that can be shared with. So what happens is when you swipe from the right, Windows shows you the list of apps that can be shared with. And when I press, for example, mail, the news app takes some content, text, pictures, hands it over to Windows, which then turns around and hands it to the mail app. And so let's send this to my wife. And she's going to wonder why I'm sending her email, but that's okay. Too bad this isn't us. And this is live and being recorded, by the way. Thanks for participating in my demo. Live. And send it, and there we go. I've sent the mail. Very cool concept. Now, you can think that you might want to do this as well in your line of business apps. So, for example, if I go to this pending expense report, which was submitted on May 17th, 19 days ago, and my manager hasn't got around to doing anything about yet, I might want to swipe in and share. That's right. You got to actually go in and view it. And then you can swipe and share and mail it. This time I'm going to mail it to me. And say, can you please approve this. Now, very often, a number of times when I've shown this demo, people have said, well, can't you just take a screenshot of that? So that I should look into that. But what I've basically just done is displayed the items, and then I haven't actually gone in and added the line breaks to make them appear on different lines. Okay? And then I send this off as email. So it's a very cool thing to have, and you can think of this as a way of sharing information between apps. Okay, but the reason I bring this up again in terms of line of business apps is there's a couple caveats. One is you cannot control whether or not the user shares. It's totally voluntary. You can programmatically make the share charm appear, but you cannot programmatically force the user to take their finger and tap a particular app. At least not in this release, you can't. Something that we'll work on in future releases. You cannot guarantee that the user shares that information, and you also cannot control which apps the user shares with. So be very careful of this. You might want to share secret business information, very sensitive business information. There's nothing to stop the user from tapping Twitter and tweeting this month's sales, right? Now, of course, there's nothing to stop the user from going to Twitter and typing it in manually. This automates the thing that would cause you to lose sleep. So just be aware that it is a very cool feature, but you don't have programmatic control over it. This is not the days where in office automation we could fire up an instance of mail and in code control what happens, or fire up an instance of Word and create a document. Okay, so it's cool to have, but be very, very aware that you have no control over it. So use it when it makes sense, but understand its limitations, because there are a lot of scenarios where it sounds cool, but it isn't going to work for you. All right, let's talk a little bit about data presentation. So the first thing we want to think about with data is that we want to design for touch. So whether you're just displaying information or whether you're giving the user the ability to enter information, you want to design for touch, which means that you can't have teeny tiny text boxes that have even teeny tinier space in between them. Because yes, you have fine control when you're using the mouse pointer, but I don't have particularly big fingers, and I can't necessarily distinguish between the text box for first name if it's this far away from the text box for last name. The AdventureWorks app does a very good job of this. Look at how much space they put in between the text boxes. This is designed for touch. The designers on this did a really, really good job. Okay, so you can very easily find the different ones here, and you can very easily go to the right one. Even that checkbox is nice and big. Okay. So again, this relates back to the keep the design clean and don't overload the screen, because you really need to design for touch. Even if you know that your users all have monitors that aren't touch capable, all they need to do is get a monitor that's touch capable. Windows 8 is touch capable, which means the app you build for it is touch capable, which means that the second the user gets a monitor that supports touch, they're going to want to do it. And if you haven't designed it in, then you've got a big mess and a big redesign in your hands. So you really want to get it over with. You really want to do it up front. In terms of displaying data, grid views and list views, great controls. The built-in templates give you these. It's pretty classic. Grid view gives you the ability to go back and forth. List views are more used for the up and down. I meant to change this slide. It says consider using list box to avoid excessive panning, but it really should say consider using stylized list views to avoid excessive panning. I put list box in there and then talked to a bunch of people and discovered that you really shouldn't necessarily use the list box for displaying robust amounts of data. What you really want to do is stylize your list views, so keep that in mind. And then you want to avoid showing too much data at the same time. That's in quotes, because that's going to be completely up to the scenario and completely up to the users. But try to not show large amounts of data at the same time. If the users want more, go back and forth with them, show the amount that's necessary, but keep the design clean. And there's a trade-off between tiny fonts and all the data in one place versus excessive scrolling. Somewhere in between the two of those is the happy medium, and you'll find it. And then spread the data across the wide page. Let the user use scroll and use semantic zoom to move back and forth. Let them use the top app bar to navigate multiple sections of data. As we saw, don't by default show a screen's worth of information and then have Chrome to get to the other screens. By default, spread the data out and let them go back and forth. So again, to see some examples of that, the customer financial fact sheet is a perfect example of this. Right here, when we go in to visit a, going to see information on a customer, all of the data is here. And we can be fetching this data in the background if we need to. We don't necessarily need to put up a spinning progress ring for 12 seconds while all the data comes down. We can certainly retrieve the data in the background asynchronously, show the key facts, charts, and then we scroll over to see more, and then we scroll over to see more. This is pretty realistic. You know, I've got 3 scrolls, and then again, the semantic zoom. For this, they chose not to put a top app bar, but they certainly could have. They certainly could have put these things in the top app bar instead of the semantic zoom. They certainly could have put these things in the top app bar as well as the semantic zoom. There's no reason that you can't have all three of those in there. And then, you know, I suppose if you really needed to, there's no reason that you couldn't, on the left, have the equivalent of folders, right? So instead of having the navigation in the top app bar or the semantic zoom, you could just put it on the left as canvas buttons, right? It's a little bit out of the ordinary, maybe, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that if that's what the users actually want. Okay, now if we go over to the expense report, let's look at past reports. So the default here is to just fill up the screen, nice, wide, deep tiles in the grid view with lots of space in between. And this is pretty classic. This is pretty common. And then to view the rest of these, I scroll. Now, what if this is my... For something like past expense reports, that's okay, because I don't know how often I need to go back and view expense reports from 3 years ago. But what if this is pending orders, or this is the customers I have, or this is information where I don't necessarily want to spend all that time scrolling. I want to see more information on the screen at once. So in that case, here's the recommendation to use the stylized list view. What I've done here is I've switched over to a list view, and I've got the information going vertically. And then if I hover over this, there's my scroll bar. And I kind of got this idea from the weather app, which does this. So the weather app shows the hourly forecast the same way. They obviously have better designers at work than me. I tried to play around with that, but then I gave up and just went simple. Okay. So here I'm seeing more information. Now, what if this... I still got a lot of space there, though, so maybe I decide that I want to get even more information. So what I'm going to do here is... Which one is it? I want this one to show up, I believe. So let's make that one visible. Yeah, and I think this is right. Collapse this one. So now when I run this, bless you, if I'm not mistaken. No, that's not what I wanted. Okay. What I really want is this visible. Collapse this. Oh, I think I wanted this one to be visible. And then collapse this one. I think this is the right one. Yeah. So I made this a grid view. I just made it smaller. Now they all fit on the screen. So that's the first thing you can do, is very easily play with the size, right? Depending on the amount of data. You could have adjustable grid views where what you do is you find out how many records there are, and then you say if it's less than 10, make them big. If it's between 10 and 25, make them the next size down. 50 to 100, make it the next size down. More than 100, don't use a grid view. Switch over to a list view. You know, you need to create the various, this is all done in XAML, so you just need to create various templates and then just play around with the font size and the margin. But you could absolutely have your app be adjusting. The other thing you could do is base it not just on the number of records, but on the screen size. So in code, find out the screen size. Determine if the user's running on a screen that's this big, or a screen that's this big, or a screen that's this big. And the bigger the screen, the bigger you can make these and have them all appear. The smaller the screen, the smaller you make them. You'd want to test this, of course. You can use the simulator to test this. You can also, I don't know how you test on the 80-inch perceptive pixel using the simulator. It doesn't go up that high, but it does go smaller. So you could detect in your app how much screen real estate you have and then adjust the UI to determine it. Because now, and this is still very readable, right? I mean, it's a little bit small, but it's still readable, and I can see everything I need without having to scroll. So, you know, avoid showing too much data at the same time, absolutely. If I've got 200 of these, I don't know any way I'm going to fit them all on the same screen because the fonts are going to be so small that you can't read it. At that point, that's too much data. But you can play around with the layout, and you can play around with the sizes and switching back and forth between grid view and list view to find that happy medium between displaying information on the screen smaller versus displaying it bigger and having the user scroll back and forth. And all you'd really need to do is do some, you know, usability studies, design studies, get some users together and help you figure out what the appropriate way to do this is. So what we've done in this talk is I'm going to now go to the advertisement slides that are on here as I sum up. So what we've seen is a number of line of business applications that adhere extremely well to the Windows Store design guidelines, but continue. Is there anything important in here? Yes, please do your evaluation. Okay. So we've seen a number of apps. The SAP app and the Push BI are in the store. The Prism app is Prism Windows Runtime at CodePlex.com. Prism Windows Runtime at CodePlex.com. My Expenses app is myexpenses.codeplex.com. The version that's up there now doesn't have all of the things we've seen here because I've been playing around with it this week, but I will post an update with everything that's in there now next week. And then my goal over the summer is to rewrite this app so that it uses Prism. What I'm using right now is the MVVM I'm using there is very kind of crude. I've got views, I've got view models, but I don't really have commands or event aggregators or a navigation service. My view models are talking directly to the data. So I've got I've got serviceable MVVM in there. But what I want to do, I am going to rewrite that over the course of the summer and make it use Prism. So watch for that. Again, just to sum up, these are some ideas that you can use when building Windows Store line of business apps. And the key takeaway, again, is that there is design guidance for Windows Store apps. And you should learn it and apply it to any Windows Store app you build, whether it's consumer or line of business or anything in between. We've seen some ways of doing that here. Any questions? Yes. Filtering. the guidelines are that you can absolutely filter. So the SAP app does a pretty good job of filtering. So here I can filter on critical, I can filter on my favorites, I can see all, I can sort by customer volume, sales volume, overdue. So that works fine. So you can absolutely filter. You could filter in the app bar, the bottom app bar. You could filter through, you know, UI. You could filter in the app bar and use menus and flyouts. So there's all kinds of ways that you can do that, but that's absolutely something you could certainly do. Yes? Okay, so the question is productivity. You're trying to cut out clicks, and what we're doing here is adding clicks. That's a valid point. So what you got to try to do is find out where the sweet spot is. There's nothing that says you have to use app bars instead of canvas buttons. You could have an app that has nothing but canvas buttons and never once has an app bar because every swipe is a second and every second is dollars. If that's the case, use canvas buttons. Don't use an app bar. Does that violate the guidelines? No, it actually doesn't, because the guidelines say use canvas buttons when it's appropriate. We just think that in most cases you could move a lot of that stuff into the app bars, but if it turns out that that's not appropriate, fine, don't use app bars. Use canvas buttons. Now, if you've got 50 different buttons and you're going to take up 40% of the screen using it with canvas buttons, well, at that point, does that violate the guidelines so much? Maybe. If you were going to put that app in the Windows Store, it's possible the store would reject it, saying, look, one of the guidelines is content over Chrome, and you've got 67% of your screen Chrome, doesn't leave any room for the content. We're not, you might get rejected from the store for that if you're going to be that egregious. But the key point here, again, is not we're not trying to be dogmatic about it. Put the buttons in the canvas and put the Chrome on the screen when it makes sense. Try to keep the design clean, but, do what makes sense. So it's a bit of a trade-off, I understand. And you might find an app that's got so much going on that relies so heavily on Chrome that you don't understand how to make it an efficient Windows Store app. So at that point, maybe that's not a good candidate. All right. Thank you very much.